BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
Dear listener, this is Ian Lee, live on BBC London 94.9. How exciting! Why would people have handcuffs at home? I'm confused. I don't know. What's that all about? I mean, not really placing people under citizen's arrest, are they? Oh, I'm just being handed a note. Hang on. They do what? Hello, this is Ian Lee, sitting in for Robert Elms all week. Don't panic. He'll be back in a week. And we're keeping all of the usual bits and pieces that Robert does throughout the day, so I'll do my best to get along as smoothly as I can. As always, whenever I'm doing a radio show, though, I could always do with a little bit of help from you. I'll give out the contact details in a bit. If anything we're talking about today, any of the things I throw out or any of the guests grab your fancy and you want to have your say, do please get in touch. In the next 10, 15 minutes or so, we'll be speaking to Jill Manley, the jazz diva and queen of the blues. After one, we'll be speaking about some of the refurbishments that are happening at the South Bank, including, well, they're going to build a huge, giant urban garden. We'll be speaking to one of the gardeners who was a heroin addict and turned his life round by gardening. I want to find out what got him so attracted to it, because gardening ain't my thing, man. We'll be talking about London's markets with Katie Ingham, director of ilovemarkets.co.uk. What are your favourite markets in London? And your best bargains as well you've picked up from markets. And before the end of the show, we'll have Joe Stilgo. Stilgo, Stilgo, that rings a bell. Oh, yeah, his dad's Richard Stilgo, that's why. Very talented musician in his own right. He's doing a cover of Abracadabra's, his new single. He's going to come in and play live. Means I get to shut up for a few minutes and listen to a man playing the piano. Wonderful. If you want to get in touch today, you can do about any of the things that we're talking about. The phone number, 020-722-42000. You can text 81333, start your text with London. Or you can email me, ian.lee, I-A-I-N, .L-E-E, at bbc.co.uk. Now, one of the joys of coming here is I'm allowed to sneak in a couple of my own songs, which is a rarity for me. So I'm sorry, but I'm going to bore you with country rock all afternoon. Is that okay? Of course it is. Let's start off with the inventors of country rock, the Monkees. Oh, what a joy. What a joy. I cannot... Let them finish. I cannot tell you how happy it makes me to play that song on... Let's just say that there may be one or two more Monkees songs snuck into the playlist that week. They invented country rock, for goodness sakes. This is what people don't understand. Forget your... who's the fella who got buried under a tree? Gram Parsons. Forget your Gram Parsons. Forget your Birds. Forget your Dylan and the Band. The Monkees invented country rock. Their first album, 1966, Papa Jean's Blues. Ladies and gentlemen, you cannot date it before that. Hello, this is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. Robert is having a week off. Shameful, due to the unique way the BBC is funded. He's allowed to have a week off. I think it's shocking behaviour. But I'm sitting in for him all week and would love to talk to you. If you do want to get in touch today, you can do. Later on in the show, we'll be talking about markets, London markets. For a long, long time, my favourite London... Oh, we're kind of going south of the river today, but my favourite market in London was Camden Market. I used to love it, and I'm talking... Well, I nearly said 10 years ago. I mean further ago than that. I'm talking maybe 20 years ago. 20, 25 years ago. When there was a seedy edge to Camden Market, wasn't there? There were lots of... Well, I think I can say this on the BBC. There were lots of dodgy stalls with men selling bootleg records, bootleg vinyl and cassettes. Young lads in the street would kind of set up with their pirate copies of albums. It was all very naughty and very dubious. And there was a strange, kind of faintly mystical aroma in the air. Then about 15 years ago, it got a bit corporate, didn't it? It got taken over. Did it get taken over by the council or something? This is the joy of doing this show, is I can throw out a question. One of you will call in with the correct answer. That's the thing. Who needs Google? 020-722-42000. Didn't it get taken over by the council and they kind of bought bits and made it all a bit corporate and some of the slightly naughtier stalls selling, you know, just below the line of legality, things got closed and moved on. And, you know, in the great scheme of things, of course, we don't want anyone doing anything naughty and illegal. That would be inappropriate. But it kind of just took away some of the excitement, didn't it, of Camden Market. I used to love it. And there was that slightly seedy, naughty, dirty atmosphere to it. It was a little bit dirty. And that's gone now. And, you know, it seems as... Oh, hey, look, there's Cybergoth. There's all the, you know, the shops selling tie-dye, because tie-dye is what people... it just feels a bit fake. Anyway, that's a North London market. We'll be talking about South London markets later on. But we can spread it open to any market in London, for goodness sakes. I'm sailing this ship today. I am indeed, if not the pilot, then the co-pilot. No, hang on, that's aeroplanes. 020-722-42000. Your market stories, and I'm going to leave it as vague as that. It can be your favourites, your worst, the best bargain you got, where you got ripped off, maybe you had a stall, anything like that. I'm leaving it as open as that. Your market stories today, please. 020-722-42000. You can also email me. Use my email address, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. We'll be speaking to Katie Ingham about markets from about 1:40, but you can give us a call now and have your say. Coming up in a little bit, I'm very excited. Our first guest is going to be coming in, Jill Manley, who is a jazz singer. She's part of Live at the Hippodrome season, August the 17th at the Hippodrome. She's very kindly brought in a CD, and if I can work out how to use this computer, there we go. This is her version of Mad World. Fantastic. There we go. That's Jill Manley, and that's her version of Mad World. She joins me now. Hello, Jill.
Good afternoon, Ian.
Nice to see you.
Well, yes, thank you. Likewise, I've heard you but never seen you, so it's a pleasant revelation.
This album I'm holding in my hands, The Lies of Handsome Men, is this a new album?
Well, newish. Came out last year.
Why did you choose Mad World?
Because I loved it from day one when it first came out in its original format, and then later on it appeared in that very strange little cult film Donnie Darko.
Who was the chap that did that? I can't remember his name.
Jake Gyllenhaal the actor.
Who did the version of Mad?
I can't remember. But then I heard Renee Fleming, the opera singer, sing it.
Wow.
And it just dawned on me, gosh, well, if I ever have to record a pop song, get that far as recording a pop song, that's as close as I'm ever going to get.
Mm.
So I did.
It is a cracking song, and it works as an up-tempo kind of thing. It works as that slow, mysterious sort of ballad. It's very striking.
It is a dark little number.
Now, listen, you are here. We're going to play the Listed London. I say play because it's kind of like a quiz. There are no wrong answers, but if I'm not happy with the answers you give me, you'll be in trouble. There will be lines.
Really?
Yeah, there'll be lines. There'll be punishments dished out. But you're here. You're playing at the Hippodrome on the 17th of August.
I am. I'm so excited. I can't even begin to tell you. It's a historic, historic cabaret room. It used to be called the Talk of the Town.
Oh, of course. Yes.
And everybody but everyone played there. And it was refurbished. The whole building was refurbished last year, or finished refurbished last year. And the Matcham Room, which is the cabaret room name, opened, and I went down there a couple of months ago to see the fantastic Buddy Greco.
Yeah.
And I took my friend Molly Parkin down there, and we were completely bowled over by the room, the way that it's been done up, the lighting, the sound, the layout, the way it's run, the way it's operated. Wonderful guy called Jeff Todd kind of runs it. He used to be at Ronnie's and Boysdale's, and he's done a magnificent job. The dressing rooms are beyond amazing.
Well, I feel that
excites me,
I feel that's cheating a little bit. I think dressing rooms should be dirty and small and a bit dank.
No, I've had that. I've done 30 years of dirty and dank, thank you. The smallest dressing room I've ever used is at the Vauxhall Tavern. Do you know it?
Oh, I've not been to, I've done stand-up at the Vauxhall Tavern years and years ago,
yes.
Great
venue. I had a residency there a couple of years ago, and the dressing room is beyond tiny.
Mm.
And it's actually quite clean now. It used to be half the size. It was literally a broom cupboard. Literally a broom cupboard.
We've all done the gigs, either as a stand-up or as a singer. Yeah. And where am I getting changed? Well, there's the toilet or the hallway. Those are your two options.
Yeah, well, I usually sort of go behind my car and just do a bat. Man, you know.
So you're performing. There aren't that many music venues in London. Correct me if I'm wrong. Apart from, you know, the kind of rock ones, the dirty bars where you can get a band playing. There aren't that many venues for jazz or for other kinds of music. Or have I got that wrong?
I don't think you've got. Well, I think there are still venues. It's true, but in terms of concert style venues, yeah, there's not a huge amount left. My favourites being obviously Ronnie Scott, and of course now will be the Hippodrome, my next favourite, I know. And then some of the smaller clubs like the 606 Jazz Club, where you can still feel you're putting on a show, people are there specifically for you. I mean, back in the day, I used to work every night in a Chinese restaurant in Camden, just up from the Jazz Cafe. That wasn't a concert, that was background music, and when people were drunk enough, then maybe they get up and dance and join in. So there is that kind of two ends of the spectrum, and there's plenty of little gigs around still in little cafes and bars and little restaurants. But in terms of places where you can really create a show and get people concentrated and listening, there's not enough.
Those gigs at the Chinese restaurant and places like that, were they soul destroying? Did you go home crying, going, "What on earth am I doing? I'm being beaten by the chop suey"? Or did you kind of thrive on those?
I thrived on them,
really?
Physically, yeah, because I got a free Chinese meal every night. Yeah, I can tell you, those duck pancakes stood me in good stead, as you can see. But I think my point was, at that point, it was early in my career, and any gig at that point was a bonus.
You take it with open
hands. You worked your chops, you got the work under your belt, you learnt to work an audience, you learnt your material, you worked with musicians, you went in blind without rehearsals most times. So, you know, in terms of building up your technique and repertoire, that was the way to do it. And to be quite honest with you, I think now there's a shortage of that possibility. Although a lot of people now go to college to learn to sing jazz, well, that's one way of doing it, but my generation, we learnt on stage, on the floor, and that was the way to do it, in my, you know, humble opinion.
I remember there being lots of talk years ago about the death of the working men's clubs and how it would kill entertainment. It didn't, because there were still other venues opening up of different kinds. But now with things like the X Factor and all of these silly programmes, I want it, and I want it now, and I don't want to work 10 years for it. And part of it is, again, I can only relate to when I used to do stand-up, part of it is standing in a room in front of 12 people who aren't listening to you, and or working in a restaurant where people are eating their dinner and waiters are walking in front of you. That's part of developing your talent, developing your character, your strength to get through, isn't it?
Well, I guess it is, and it's not easy. I mean, I went through a period of 7 years retirement because I got so sick of the business, which kind of I'll refer to in some of my choices in the questions later. But that whole thing now of wanting instant fame and instant recognition doesn't exist in the jazz world. It never did, and I don't think it ever will, because primarily, historically, it's an oral tradition. It's one that you learn on the job and you learn from other musicians, and it's not something you can get overnight. So I'm glad it's taken me 30 years to get to a point where I kind of feel reasonably confident.
Really? To feel confident?
Reasonably confident. I have friends who are in their 80s, one friend who's 81, one who's 87, American jazz singers who are still touring, Sheila Jordan and Mark Murphy. They still come over here. And I think it's taken them, you know, to their 70s to kind of feel totally comfortable in their form of expression. It is a learning process, and one that grows with your personal growth. If that sounds a bit kind of spiritual, so let it be, you know.
I think you're allowed. I think you're, as I get older, kind of these things that I would have turned my nose up at what you just said about 5 years ago. Now I'm a dad, and now I've just turned 40, and I'm kind of, oh, yeah, yeah.
You're a baby.
Oh, bless you, my darling.
God, 40.
Oh, get her back every day this week, please. Get her back.
You're a bubba.
Oh, thank you so
baby daddy.
Much. Why jazz? Why was it jazz that got you hooked?
Weirdly, it was an accident. I loved jazz, listening to it, and was brought up listening to it in my home. My parents had quite a collection, and we listened to all the jazz programs on the radio. But when I came to London, I went to drama school. I was going to be a classical actress. Mm-hmm. And I came out, and in those days, the Equity was a closed shop, the theatre union. And so they said to me, look, if you can sing, go out and get yourself a few gigs, bring us back the contracts, and we will reconsider you. So I went, I thought, well, that's easy, she says. I knew a lot of musical theatre. So I went and got myself a gig at the National Theatre, at the Barbican, and at the Festival Hall, as you do. My first live singing performances, went back with the contracts, and they said, well, actually, we think you'd be better served by Musicians Union. So I kind of dug my heels in and thought, yeah, why not? And then I had a turning point, which we'll come to in our discussion later, where I met someone who showed me how jazz singing could be completely revitalized in a way I imagined, but didn't quite know how to get my teeth into. And I met some musicians, and the rest was history.
It's kind of the thing that won't go away. Jazz is, and it has periods when it's very, very fashionable and periods when it's not very fashionable, but it's always there, just bubbling away underneath, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a mosquito bite. You have to scratch it once in a while, don't you?
And my mum would say it's as irritating as mosquitoes, but that's my mum.
To some. We want to convert you, mama.
Listen, it's very nice to meet you. Stay there.
I'm staying.
Because I've got your 15 questions here. You are our listener, London, Jill. You ain't going nowhere.
Well,
no. We ain't going nowhere today. If you want to give us a call and take part in this, you can, of course, 020-722-42000. My name is Ian Lee. I'm sitting in for Robert Elms. If you want to give me an email as well today, use my email address, because I can access it. Robert's locked me out of his emails. How rude. I don't know what I did last time. I may have signed him up for some sites that he didn't want to be signed up to, but that's all part of the business. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Are you a big fan of markets? We're talking markets a bit later on.
Yeah,
you?
I love them.
You like a little wander?
Love them, honey.
I get that from my dad. My dad used to love collecting rubbish, and we would spend so, honestly,
one man's treasure is another man's rubbish, and vice versa.
He used to spend so much time at the local dump back in the 70s when you could go to the dump, and I remember he came home one day with this massive suitcase, what looked like a suitcase, and we said, Dad, what have you got there? Have a look at this. And he opened it, the most beautiful accordion. It was just, and you could do that back then. But you're a fan of going to markets and browsing and stuff.
Totally.
81333, start your text with London if you want to talk about that. We'll have more from Jill Manley shortly. But before that, we're coming up to 12:30. Hello, this is Ian Lee, sitting in for Robert Elms. I'm here all week. I'm joined by Jill Manley, who's going to be my listed Londoner in a little bit. We're going to play a song off your album, Go Away Little Boy. Why did you do this? This is Goffin and King, who I'm huge fans of.
Well, hello, yeah, but I did it because I'm 52. And I realised that going for older men was no longer an option, because they'd all be pensioners. So I figured I'd start looking sort of at people younger than my age. And my most recent treasure was 44, which for me is young.
You mucky.
I know,
Jill.
It's outrageous.
Dirty.
It's outrageous.
And did you send him away?
Not yet.
Hey, it turns out, Jill, you're not bad. You're not bad. You've got quite a nice voice.
Quite nice, is it, love? Quite nice.
That sounds lovely.
Thank you, honey.
Boy, oh boy, I wish we could broadcast the stuff we say off air. We have just... I won't give anything away. Jill and I have just had the best chat ever. It turns out we have quite a lot in common. That's all I'm going to say.
It's all right.
It's a kind of like... Hey, listen, you're not getting off light. We've nice, gentle introduction. Now is where your work starts.
I understand.
If you want to plug your gig again, then you've got to give me some good answers.
I've got to earn it.
Got to earn it, baby. Okay. You've got to earn it. Now, Jill Manley, jazz singer, you are our listed Londoner today. I have here 15 questions, and we're going to go through them, and let's see what you got. First question, number one. I think this is quite an easy one, I think, to ease
into. Very easy.
Your favourite neighbourhood in London?
Immediately sprang to mind, Kennington/Vauxhall.
Oh, I know that area quite well. Yeah, my nan used to live there. Why? Why is that so special?
Lots of connections, lots of lovely things happen there, lots of strange things happen there. But also, I love the fact that it's resisted homogenization completely. That this, it has an independent bookshop. It has independent little cafes and bars and restaurants, apart from a Pizza Express, but that's its kind of only concession, really. And also, special things have happened there for me. I worked at the Vauxhall Tavern for a couple of years as a, I had a residency there, and it kind of was a period, I'd had 7 years of retirement as a jazz singer, and I had a restaurant during that time, and I was tempted back into the business by going to work at the Vauxhall Tavern and kind of rediscovered the business in a totally different way, which was wonderful. But I also, in 98, during the period when I wasn't working in music, I went to work for a conservation architect called Giles Quorm.
A conservation architect. Okay.
And he's still there. Very special practice. It was very small. It was in a back street. It was a small studio with a little team of very gifted architects who weren't working on computers. It was all hand-drawn, and they specialise, and they still do, in conservation of old buildings. And Giles himself, he's an amazing... He's a character, I'll say that. He's definitely a character. But his knowledge and expertise is bar none. I think. And he's called in to consult on places like the British Museum. You know, we worked on buildings like the Princess Diana Memorial before that opened down in Althorpe. We were working on the V&A. We worked on the Science Museum.
So what would you do then? What was your role?
Okay, well, I wasn't an architect. I was his PA.
Wow.
And at the time, it was kind of weird because they were kind of... They weren't used to someone like me. It was a very quiet kind of... sort of gentle little practice.
It's fair to say you're like a whirlwind.
Well, and I had a shaved head at the time.
Right, okay.
And I kind of burst in on them, actually, as a very poor typist, but I had great phone manner. And that's what sold me, was that I recognised every client before they could even say, this is, on the phone. And I would immediately engage with them and tell them what's going on in their job. And then I'd type loads of horrible reports, which were deadly dull, although I learned a lot about architecture. And I was the worst typist. I still am. But it didn't matter.
They
because
kept you.
I brought something to them that was kind of energy, I guess.
Yeah. Well, then this goes on to the second question, and yeah. I was thinking this might, if you've worked closely with architects, this might be a tough one to answer then.
No, not
at
all.
Really, your favourite building?
Absolutely, without question. And again, it's in Kennington. It's an old courthouse, originally, in Renfrew Road, SE11, and it is now, and has been for about 15 years, a Buddhist centre.
Right.
A Tibetan Buddhist centre. And I discovered it by accident. And it is the most extraordinary, and this is what I love about conservation architecture and the recycling of a building, is that you can take a building that has had one life and completely alter that life into something new and maybe positive. So here was this high security building, you know, with bomb-proof glass, and this is where they were trying IRA terrorists at one point. And the courtroom now is the meditation room.
Wow, that's a transformation.
And it has a huge statue, hand-built statue, sculpted of Buddha. And the cell block, which was originally where they would bring the prisoners each day to be foisted in court, are now little rooms for people to retreat in. So that, to me, is the beauty of conservation and the
evolution of a building is incredible, isn't it?
Because it's beautiful.
There are similarities between getting locked up in a cell and going away for a little spiritual, you know, contemplation, I would imagine.
Well, it's about unlocking, you know, your mind as well as your body.
You old head, you. I like you. I want to talk to you for longer.
Yeah, okay.
We'll swap numbers for this. Okay, your most hated building, then. Is there one building in London?
Okay, so hate was a very strong word.
Yes.
And it brought something up in me that I don't like, because I'm not a hater of any kind. I don't believe in that word. So I said my building, or something I didn't like so much but could never hate. And it's gone now. And this is destroying to say it, but the roundabout at Waterloo Station by Westminster Bridge used to have a horrible derelict kind of office block.
Yes, it did, yes.
Is that, 4 years.
Is that the one with the walkway?
Didn't have a walkway. No. It was just right by the hospital, the roundabout. That's by St Thomas's Hospital and Westminster Bridge and Waterloo Station's behind it. It's now a hotel.
Right, yeah, yeah, I know.
And it still looks dark.
Yes.
It looks like it's been plonked there. But that kind of was the building that annoyed me the most, because it sat there being unused, undeveloped, and was ridiculously positioned anyway. Who the hell wants to work on a roundabout? Nobody, clearly. So it has gone. Can't say what's replaced it is any better.
I sometimes quite like abandoned buildings in cities. Because when I was growing up, we used to live in Slough, and we would come into London in the 70s and the 80s, there were quite a few abandoned, old, dirty buildings. There may even have been in the 70s, I might be wrong, a couple of bomb sites still in various parts of London. And you would see things springing up around it, and those kind of decaying buildings were quite poignant for me. They kind of mean something.
Yeah, and there was one on Lordship Lane in East Dulwich for years, a Gothic house, which apparently was a listed building but was left to rot for 20-odd years and has just literally been redone, and people are going to live in it. But it was apparently the first residential home built out of cement. I know, that's why it was listed. Can you imagine? It's opposite Dulwich Woods, and it's actually finally just been, you know, renovated and conserved, and looks gorgeous.
Yep.
You know, so just takes time in this country. It takes time.
The best view in London.
Oh, that was an easy one too. Coming over Waterloo Bridge, going across the bridge from Waterloo, South London, into Central London at night. It's so beautiful. It's magical, and every time I do it, my heart lifts, because for me, it's like, there's my playground. Mm. Hello. And you can see St. Paul's. You can see the eye. Sometimes there's something, some structure outside the Hayward Gallery, some sort of exhibit or some light. And then you've got the National Theatre, which keeps sort of doing things. And there's just that sense of, I'm now getting into the heart of everything that excites me. Mm. And the lighting. And just as dusk is coming, it's that magical moment, and there is nothing like that. So that was an easy one.
Yeah, you're right. Crossing the river, a lot of those bridges, but that bridge, crossing the river at night time in London, it does. It looks. It's what I imagine tourists want to see. You know, it's that exciting. That's the exciting London that people come to see from all over the world,
totally,
isn't it?
Totally. But that one just in particular, because every building on that little stretch across there is just, you've got the Savoy and it just, I don't know, it just still today, it excites me.
Favourite open space, Jill?
That was a funny one. The first one that sprung to mind was Woman's Pond on Hampstead Heath.
Oh, I see.
Do you know it?
I'm aware of it. I've not been in there.
Because you'd be chased out.
I would be in very serious trouble, yes.
And if you went to Men's Pond, you might get nervous too.
I don't get this thing for, hey, let's all strip off and jump into a freezing cold pond.
Oh, really?
I don't want fish touching my legs.
Well, they don't. They swim away.
No.
They're not interested in your legs.
I don't want to be interested in any part of me. Whenever I've swum in rivers or ponds or lakes, it's been a long time, fish is just touching me. No, thank you.
Okay.
No.
Well, I grew up swimming in lakes as a child. I lived in a magical place in Buckinghamshire called Stowe. It's the home of the original Duke of Buckingham, who built Buckingham Palace.
Mm.
And my father was a school teacher there. And all through the summer, the moment school was out, we would cycle to the lakes every day and just be in the lake. So I have an affinity to cold, lovely water with weeds everywhere and the smell of wet wood.
I've gone off you now.
Bliss. Okay, well, then I've got another
no,
nice
you can,
one.
You can keep that.
Highgate Cemetery.
Oh, now you're talking. I'm back in love with you again.
There
I'm
you
back
go.
In love with
I
you.
It wouldn't take long.
Number six, what's your most interesting shop?
Oh, easy. Watkins Bookshop in Cecil Court.
Go on.
Fantastic. Just off St Martin's Lane. It's an esoteric bookshop. And you can buy books on magic and the occult and witchcraft and paganism and religions and philosophy. And it's one of those places you walk in and it's daylight and you walk out and it's the evening. You think, where did that time go?
I've just seen, speaking of time, look, we've only got 11 minutes. I'm going to rattle through these.
No, it's me being naughty.
Favourite bar, pub or restaurant?
Okay, well, the original 606 Club, which was actually positioned at 606 Kings Road, has actually moved to Lotts Road. but I will be forever in love with both the old and the new 606, and the old and the new Ronnie Scott's. Easy.
Because that got redone 5-6 years ago, so yeah, maybe a bit longer than that, actually.
I didn't mind it being refurbished upstairs, but they got rid of the bar downstairs, which was a huge loss.
Yes.
That's where we hung out with everyone, so... But I still love it.
This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms. I'm talking to jazz singer Jill Manley. We're going through her 15 questions. Your most memorable night out in London. I'm imagining as a jazz singer, you've had one or two memorable and unmemorable ones for whatever reasons.
Some of them are so memorable I daren't repeat,
good
Ian.
For you, yes, well done.
Okay, so this is a quickie, if that's possible. When I first came to London, I was a student and I worked at the National Theatre as an usher, as you do. And all the ushers were either artists, composers, struggling actors. It was a fascinating place to work. And I and my kind of adopted sister, who's listening, Anne Lynn, hello Anne, I met her there and wonderful people. And one night, someone passed me a herbal cigarette.
Oh, I say, yes, I've read
about
those.
Of the naughty life,
yes.
Which I smoked and enjoyed. And we all decided to make a dash across Waterloo Bridge after the show to the Donmar Warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the night I met and discovered one of our greatest jazz singers in this country, Ian Shaw.
Mm.
And that was my life-changing moment as a jazz singer, because he showed me what was possible. He said that I was quite terrifying on one level to meet, but on another level, we became fast friends for the next 30 years. So that would be my most memorable night.
How would you like to spend your ideal day off in London?
I start with a fry up.
Oh, yes.
Got to have fried bread and tinned tomatoes and bacon.
Yeah.
Always a strong builder's tea. So a cafe that will do that really well. That's a good start. Then I head off to the South Bank. I just have that eternal love for anything going on at the South Bank. I love the food market there at weekends. It's fantastic.
Definitely. The South Bank does have an energy about it, doesn't it?
There wonderful. Is something,
and you don't have to go and do anything. Just go and get a coffee and sit
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
I mean, a buzz.
I've loved it since 1979. I taught myself to knit at the South Bank, sitting on a... You know, on a bench by the river, the bookshop, the book markets there,
yeah.
And now this food market and the coffee shops. There's nothing about South Bank that would ever that I would ever be tired of. So that would take up some time, and then I have to go and see a film.
Mm.
I have to be in a cinema. Don't care which one. Got to be a cinema. And then my day would end at the Mona Lisa in the King's Road with Molly Parkin. With all the sort of eccentric bohemian characters that still live in the King's Road. And we'd have Portofino prawns and have a right giggle about our love lives. And hers has been a lot more interesting than mine, of course.
Well, you've got a 44-year-old toy boy, Jill. You're doing all right.
Yeah, well, I won't speak too loudly about that.
Oh, sorry. Is it
hush, hush. It is, kind of.
Oh, excuse me. Moving on. You've got a friend visiting from out of London.
Yeah.
Where would you take them?
Brick Lane Bagel, All Night Bagel Bakery.
Yeah.
Brick Lane, the way it used to be, not now. I guess some people would say Brick Lane's cooler now. I disagree. It was much better when it was manky and full of Indian restaurants.
It's that thing we were saying about London becoming homogenised and becoming a little bit corporate. And sometimes it's nice, you know, dirty places can be nice. And Brick Lane is one of those places that over the last 10 years, it's a different place from what it was.
Completely. And I used to love all the side streets, Fournier Street and all those wonderful Georgian buildings. Just, I don't know, it's kind of gone for me. But I'm guessing that would be a place to start. And then the Natural History Museum for the dinosaurs.
Because
that still fills me with amazement and joy.
Yeah.
That scares me and thrills me. And then the Peace Pagoda in Battersea Park. And we'll go and meditate with Buddha and watch the river.
Good choices.
Awesome.
The Natural History Museum is awesome, isn't it? Again, I've got a little boy. Free day out. Oh, it's wonderful. The worst journey you've ever had to make in London?
Any drive that consists of me having to go up the Edgware Road to North London.
Why? Is it the Edgware Road specifically or North London itself?
Just going to North London. Oh. I get lost. I get afraid. The traffic is horrendous. I don't like it. It scares me. That's why I stay south.
I lived in North London for 20 years. Sort of Crouch End, Highgate, Muswell Hill for 12 years. It's a marvellous place.
Yeah.
Very friendly, clean.
All my worst love affairs happened in North London. So, and my marriage. So I have to say, North London is a no-no for me.
I see. You have a history of...
Apparently so, yes.
your personal London landmark?
Personal London landmark. Well, the Buddhist Centre in Kennington.
Yeah.
I resonate there, and I met the Dalai Lama there, and
wow.
I sang for him there.
Wow. How did you get to sing for the Dalai Lama?
Well, I did it twice. I did it once in India and once in London, because...
Did he go, oh, no, not you again. Well, oh, flipping heck.
No, actually, it was quite sweet, because he saw me, and he sort of winked at me as if to say, yeah, I remember you from India. No, I sang for him in Tibetan, in India. I was in Bodh Gaya, and I meditated with him under the Bodhi tree, the great stupa. I just, you know, the most extraordinary experience. I could have kind of died happy after that, really.
So did you say you sang in Tibetan?
Yes. I couldn't do it now because I haven't got the words in front of me.
Oh, I see.
Sorry. But it was his long life prayer. And it, funnily enough, it went to the tune of Amazing Grace.
Oh, I'm trying. I bet that was
so
wonderful.
So it was weird. It was a weird kind of incantation of Amazing Grace in Tibetan. I'll say no more than that.
If we had more time, I would sing to you in Hindi, but we're running out of time, so I shan't fit that in, I'm afraid. Your favourite fictional London, Jill?
Do you know, that was really weirdly hard. But I finally plumped on, and I don't know if this is allowed, but, you know, all the characters in Upstairs, Downstairs.
It's not allowed. No, of course it's allowed. Of course it's allowed. I don't think there are many rules to this. Okay. We can be quite free and easy.
Well,
why?
Fictional. They lived in London. Yeah, I loved Upstairs, Downstairs. Absolutely loved it.
Old Upstairs, Downstairs, or new Upstairs?
Well, old, I have to say. Yeah. New didn't quite work for me.
No, I know what you mean.
So, yeah, that's as far as I got with that one, really.
Your favourite... Don't worry, it's not a test. You'll be free to go at the end. There'll be no detention. Your favourite London film, book, or documentary?
Oh,
last two questions.
Immediately, two sprang to mind. Okay, so the film... It's a wonderful black and white film directed by Joseph Losey in 1963 called The Servant.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, very dark film. James Fox and Dirk Bogarde, Wendy Craig and Sarah Miles. Very dark film. You have to see it. It's set predominantly in South Kensington, but there's also many scenes in nightclubs, 1960s nightclubs, and the music was by John Dankworth and the singing by Cleo Lane.
Oh, of course.
And it's
wonderful.
A very dark tale of how roles are reversed and power is exchanged in a relationship between a man and his butler, the butler being played by Dirk Bogarde. Have to see it. The screenplay was by Harold Pinter. And then...
I've not even heard of this. This sounds awesome.
Oh, please dig it out. The Servant. You've got to see it.
Do you get to see lots of shots of old London?
Yes, you do.
Great.
But also Passport to Pimlico was another great film. Anything like that, really.
I do love film. My favourite types of old London films are ones where you get to see Piccadilly Circus in the 1950s.
Yes, I don't know why. Absolutely, yeah.
You want really excites me.
And then there was a documentary that the BBC showed, which I tried to find clips of, but couldn't, about Archer Street in Soho in the 50s.
Okay.
And it was really about, you know, the musicians and the jazz musicians and where they all hung out, because all the music agents were there and they'd go down, you know, and try and get gigs, and then Ronnie Scott and his first club, and then moving the club, and it was a great documentary. I can't find it anywhere, but it was on the Beeb.
So. Do you know what it was called?
I think it was just called Archer Street.
There'll be 020-722-42000. Someone will know. Last question.
Yeah.
If you could travel to any time period in London, past or future, where would you go to,
1950s Jill? Soho. No question.
Really?
Absolutely no question.
You were saying you felt that you were born in the wrong time.
Absolutely. I think if I'd have been born sort of late 30s, early 40s, I think musically I would have been absolutely in my time. I kind of feel like an old bird really now with my music, but... It was an exciting time, and we were out of the war, and fashion and music and politics, everything was changing rapidly.
It was
and
people
excitingly.
Experiencing freedom, wasn't it?
Totally.
And expressing
Absolutely.
Themselves for the first time in a long, long time.
And being born in the 60s, even though I was a young child in the 60s, I still kind of had a sense of that freedom being generated, and being very pleased that I was around in that era. So, yeah, that would have been perfect, but I wasn't, so...
Well, your prize is we can send you back there. No, we can't.
Yay.
Jill Manley, it's so nice to meet you. You're
and
an absolute
you.
Star. You're playing at the Hippodrome on the 17th of August.
Yeah.
Is there a website or anything if people want to come and find out more about
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. I have a fantastic website run by an absolute sweetheart called David Barrett. Heads up for David.
Heads up for David.
Yeah, and it's called jillmanleyjazz.co.uk. And the new show is a fantastic... collection of the Etta James material, the blues singer who passed away last year, all her big hits and more. It's lively, it's fun, and it's naughty and it's sexy.
You got. She threw that in right at the end. It's naughty and it's. Jill, it's absolutely lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for coming
Bless
in,
you,
my dear.
Honey.
Right.
BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
An hour into it, and so far we've lost nobody. That's got to be good news, hasn't it? Hello, this is Ian Lee, sitting in for Robert Elms. I'm here all week. It's only for a week. Don't panic. And I'm not messing with the formula too much either. We're kind of keeping in all of Robert's regular features, and you're more than welcome, as always, to take part in any of the things we're talking about. Markets are coming up later on. Markets, markets, markets. Keen for your market stories. And this can be anything. Maybe you had a market stall. You got ripped off in a market. You got chased through a market. You lost your clothes in a market. Pretty much anything. Or if you just want to phone up and tell me your best market. I'm getting so old, I'm starting to have those conversations where I go, well, Camden Market 20 years ago. Kensington Market 23 years ago was much, much better. If you want to give us your... I'm so old. You know you're old when you can talk about something that happened 20 years ago and you were still a grown-up then. Man alive. If you want to get in touch, you can email me, ian.lee, I-A-I-N.L-E-E, at bbc.co.uk. You can send me a text, 81333, start with London. Oh, this is the best way to do it. 020-722-42000. Talking about some changes, the Festival of Neighbourhoods on the South Bank. The site's been transformed into a giant urban garden. We'll be speaking to the people behind that shortly. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. How about a little bit of Stephen Stills? I don't agree with the ethics of this song, but it's a very catchy chorus. He's very naughty, Stephen Stills, in more ways than one. He's my favourite out of all the Crosby, Stills, Nash and indeed the Young. He's by far the best musician out of all of them. But love the one you're with. I'm not sure I can condone that kind of behaviour. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms on BBC London 94.9. Now joined by let's go around and say hello to everyone first, shall we? We've got Rachel Harris. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. I'm sitting in for Robert and it's always slightly nerve-wracking because all of his fans will be going, sitting there with their arms crossed. Go on then. Go on then. You think you're as good at Elms? Go on, entertain us. I think we got away with it just about.
I'm already impressed.
Thank you. Kelvin Barton. Hello, Kelvin.
Hiya.
And Paul Foot over there. Hello, Paul.
Hello, mate.
I can just about see you behind that microphone.
Oh, right. Okay.
Now, the reason you're here is because of the Festival of Neighbourhood on the South Bank. Is that right, Rachel?
That's right.
Tell us what it is and what your connection is with it.
Okay. So I'm head of participation at South Bank Centre, which is a really nice job, which means that I'm involved in creating these festivals that we do throughout the year that involving many, many different art forms, and we tend to have a big one over the summer that's really accessible for families, for all sorts of people, professional artists, for beginners, for people that just want to have a go. And this year we are doing something called Festival of Neighbourhood, which is kind of what it sounds. It's about investigating all the things it means to have neighbours, to be a neighbour, what it means to live in a community, and that enables us to do things like have talks where we discuss the issues behind that, but also it enables us to turn the site into a huge playground of neighbourhood and invite many different communities
there. For a lot of people that could mean not talking to people, slamming doors loudly and playing loud music at 11 o'clock at night. I'm assuming you're going for the more optimistic view on neighbourhoods.
Yeah, it's not that we avoid things like that. Like, they might come across in maybe some of our more serious events,
right.
But the basic atmosphere of the Summer Festival is about being part of a community, having fun, which takes us back to the original origins of South Bank Centre in 1951, which was a big celebration after the war where people could come to the site, be informed, but also join in, have fun. So I was down there yesterday and you've got literally thousands of people enjoying themselves, seeing performances. We had a big celebration of Deptford, so we're kind of going round focusing and honing in on different communities, some of them in London. So it was a big weekend where we invited many, many partners from Deptford, community groups, arts organisations to come and share their work, and so you could sit in and watch those performances, join in or wander around the site and then and just take your drink and look at the amazing sculptures made of hedges and the giant sculptures, the fountains, the allotments across
the site. You've
sold
me sculptures made of hedges. It's always my kind of thing. And, and there are acts and entertainment going on as well.
All the
so
time.
There'll be live performances.
Yeah. The idea is that South Bank Centre, you can either get a ticket and go into one of the halls and see top class art, or that same standard of art is out and about. So we're really famous for our open foyers, and it's a 21 acre site, so there's always something going on.
So you're head of participation,
yep.
which is a great title.
It's a good
Does
title.
That mean that you spend, when this festival isn't on, you spend the year, are you booking the acts that come along? What exactly is your role?
So my role is to work with many, many different colleagues to invite artists to come. And as you say, it's kind of a way of booking acts. But we tend to do it by starting off with an idea that then turns into a festival.
Mm.
We like festivals so much that we have about 10 a year now. So there'll be a different idea for each festival. One is a children's festival. Another is about women and women's place in the world. Another one is looking at the connection between the UK and India. And then we have these big summer festivals. So I have to balance all these elements, which is making sure you get really, really the best quality art and culture. And for us, culture is everything from having the best food to inviting the best orchestras. Mm.
I want your job, please. Doesn't it sound fun? You're creating these huge things that thousands of people are going to come and see. It's wonderful.
So a day in the life of me is coming in, and it might be inviting artists to come and be part of the festival. So, but I wouldn't just invite them. I'd say, you know, we're part of Festival of Neighbourhood. What do you think you could contribute on that theme? And we work together for many months.
So you're not just booking an act. You're asking them what they think they could bring that's unique and could develop within it.
So it's very carefully chosen. It's not just a case of are you good. It's a case of we need to balance that we invite lots of local artists as well as people that are more well known from around the world. But my job specifically is then about making sure many people who might not even know about South Bank Centre to feel welcome when they come down. So 50% of all of our work is for free. So back to this kind of foyers and the outdoor spaces that I mentioned. We work to make sure that people can kind of trip across exciting things. So I might be working on an exhibition that's for free and outdoor in the public, or the back to the giant people made out of hedges, or as this weekend, making sure that if we're really going to say we're celebrating Deptford, that we've gone to that community and worked with that community over many months, so that it's really genuine and authentic.
Well, Kelvin Barton, Paul Pulford, you're here. You're part of this Festival of Neighbourhood. Kelvin, you're part of a gardening team. Is that right? Have I demeaned you by using the word gardener?
Well, we both are. I oversee the a mental health engagement project for Housing Association in East London.
Okay.
Which we've been invited by South Bank and the Eden Project to build and manage and maintain a garden at the Queen Elizabeth Hall.
And this is grounded ecotherapy
grounded
that you
ecotherapy.
Work with. Right, okay. So what are you doing? You're doing a garden at the festival hall.
Yeah, but my main job is a social worker. So
right.
I work with people with drug and alcohol problems, previous history of sleeping on the streets, mental health problems. They've suffered some sort of trauma in their lives. So my job's always been to try and get people out of hostels, trying to get them active, getting them engaged in things that are interesting.
Mm.
So that's kind of my part in grounded ecotherapy, is very much the people side of things, kind of working with people when they relapse, because people can do really good for a period of time, they kind of stabilise in substances, stabilise in mental health, but then sometimes that can go the other way too.
Well, quite often I would imagine that can be the thing. You think, oh, I'm fine, I'm better, I can have a little drink now, and you go straight back down, of course.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't
or something traumatic happens to life, a death, a breakup in relationship, and then you've got to try and pick up the pieces.
It's keeping
and
the balance,
it's also trying
it?
To make a strong foundation for people so that when something awful happens or something traumatic happens, there isn't so far to fall next time.
Mm.
So it's not going to be falling straight back to living rough on the streets.
And Paul, you're part of this, you're the head gardener.
Yes, I'm the head gardener.
That's not a bad title, is it?
I'm very proud and feel privileged to be there, to be working on the garden, to have participated in building it and running it. And it's a really beautiful space to be. Yeah, and I myself had experiences of homelessness. I mean, 2005, I was living on the streets,
right.
And I was a heroin addict, alcoholic, had severe mental health problems. I wouldn't have lasted another year on the streets. And I was lucky enough to get a place living in the Providence Row Health Association's hostel, where they gave me a room as long as I was prepared to deal with my drug addictions, which I did. And after being there for a year, I remembered what was a lady that I used to sell the Big Issue on the streets, one of my customers who was used to look after me and give me an extra fiver once a week. She knew I'd moved into the hostel, and she said, "Well, look, Paul, try and remember what made you happy when you was a child and what you wanted to be when you grew up." And I remembered the most happiest parts of my childhood was I was gardening, because my dad was disabled, he had polio, he was in a wheelchair. So I had to do the gardening for my pocket money, like when I was six, pushing a petrol mower at six, cutting the hedge and so on. So I started building a garden in the back of the hostel, out of wood from skips and so on, and then sort of lost myself in garden. It really helped me. Then that's when I met Kelvin, because he was my mental health worker, and you know he was helping me a great deal. And then suddenly noticed that lots of other residents in the hostel, they started to come out to help. It's a long story. We started up a voluntary gardening club, meeting twice a week. We had an allotment, and that's how it started, sort of 7 years ago. And now I'm sort of feel like I'm at the pinnacle of my life now, being head gardener, running this garden, and watching other people, other members of our group, getting their lives back together again from working on the rooftop garden.
I'm not a great one for gardening, but I've been reading the book about sort of connecting with spirituality and stuff.
Yeah.
And there is a big thing in there about getting your hands dirty, working with the earth, working with plants, watching
exactly,
things grow.
Exactly. That's why we're called grounded. Right. To actually touch the earth, to actually touch something that's living is the most sort of energizing, most holistic thing one can do. It's the most natural thing for us to do. If you imagine 500 years ago, if you couldn't grow vegetables, if you didn't know the healing qualities of all the wild plants that grew around you, if you couldn't work with trees, you couldn't build houses, you couldn't feed yourself, it's what we all did. And we've now gone so far away from it. And as you just explained, I suffer from bipolar. I woke up yesterday morning in a real deep hole, didn't want to get out of bed, just wanted to go back to sleep. And I went out and went straight and sat amongst vegetables at a local farm, and you know, that was basically got my head together.
So you're well enough now to know when you're starting to feel not very well that you know what to do.
Yeah,
you've got
exactly.
a plan in place that you can go and operate
exactly.
on, and it works.
And that's how it works for members of our group.
Right.
I mean, 95% of our group are all ex-homeless people that have all suffered problems like myself with drugs, alcohol, mental health problems, you know, is what causes the drug taking in the first place. And it's just fantastic to watch them open up and get their lives, you know, bouncing back from gardening. But it's not the only part. We work on other projects in the East End of London,
right.
but the building the South Bank garden, that is the sort of pinnacle of my life at the moment.
Why won't my potatoes grow? I'm growing potatoes. Last few years, I've tried to grow potatoes. These horrible, dirty, soggy little things come out of the ground. What am I doing wrong?
You've not put enough fertiliser in the soil in the autumn.
It's good.
And you've got to feed them with seaweed as well.
Oh, really?
Feed them with seaweed, liquid seaweed or powdered seaweed again, and then you'll have beautiful potatoes next year.
It's an amazing turnaround, isn't it? I've got friends who have suffered drug addiction, to come from a problem where drugs have controlled your life, as well as the mental health issues, as well as being homeless, everything against you. Suddenly, you're head gardener for an organisation. You're doing a big gardening display at the South Bank Centre. How does that make you feel? You look back at your life and where you are now.
It makes me feel fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, just sat here talking to you now. It's great, and again, not just for myself but other members of our group, seeing them, you know, sorting their lives out, coming to work every day. I mean, we're grounded, we're at the South Bank 7 days a week, because we have to at the moment. You know, watering has been our biggest problem at the moment.
But
I mean, everybody should come and visit it, should see it, because you have to see it to believe what a wonderful place it is. We've got thousands of school children coming every week. The kids can just wander through the vegetable allotments, just taking pieces of mint and peas and eating them, which how often does a child get to do that?
This is the I've got two little boys and we are growing vegetables. And I think it's so important because kids don't know where food comes from.
Exactly.
Where do peas come from? Tesco's. So to grow stuff and for them to come to this, because not everyone's got a garden, for them exactly. to come to this and see it and pick it and smell that mint, rub that mint.
And taste it.
And taste it. It's a huge thing, isn't it, for young people? We forget that.
Yeah,
I think.
It totally blows them away. Totally blows them away.
We're in the middle of a city as well. Yeah. Sorry, I was just going to say that. Yeah, we're right in the middle of a city.
Yeah.
And we're just so proud of the work that Paul's been doing. It's just brought the whole, the roof to light, and that what you're doing there is now spreading across the whole site, and we hope to multiply it. And we're able to bring these wonderful specialists like Paul, who as he's saying, is getting so much from it personally. Mm. But then literally thousands of other people are able to just enjoy the garden or learn there. And yeah. We were saying the other night, you know, just people there having a drink, but I mean thousands. The best view in London.
Yeah.
And yet you've got experts like Paul wandering around.
It's a bit of Merry England. If you romanticise an old English village, that's what it's like on the roof. You've got a wonderful village green encompassed with wildflowers, with wildflower meadows next to it, allotments.
And this
teeming,
is all on the roof?
All on the roof. Allotments teeming with veg. You've got onions, shallots, garlic, runner beans, courgettes, potatoes, strawberries, dill, chives, parsley, five different types of mint, all growing there.
You've not brought anything with you lot.
I've actually just picked some soap work, which I'm going to make my own shampoo tonight with to wash my hair, and there will be some people out there that know what I'm talking about.
Kevin, how did it work? Did you get? You got a phone call one day saying, you fancy coming to the South Bank, and what can you bring to us? Is that how it works?
Pretty much. We were working with the Eden Project in Cornwall to do a couple of Chelsea flower shows. It was part of the big Places of Change programme, which the government had set up. They invested a load of money into homelessness to change hostels from rather than a place to just get people off the street, but a place to actually change and develop their lives. So we were asked to work with the Chelsea flower show and the Eden guys for a while. Then they were working with the South Bank, and we were in the main London agency at the time, so they came to us and asked if we would mind. And I was like, yeah, of course we would.
I think we can fit that in the diary. Yes. We can make those dates work.
See what we can do. But so for us, it's a great thing because we work primarily in East London to get people that have been stigmatised through mental health and drugs to go into places where there's big population of people. It does wonders people's confidence. You know, the gardeners, they're going around cleaning, picking things, tidying up the garden, and they've got the general public coming up and asking them questions about gardening. They're not talking to them about being on drugs. They're not doing that. We've got this kind of phrase that we say, whenever you're on the gardener, you're a gardener. Mm. You're not schizophrenic. You're not a drug user. I'm not a social worker. We're just gardeners.
There is a real stigma around mental illness and drug and alcohol problems. And people think, oh, nuts. I don't want to get, they're going to stab me. And it's terrible that the people have that stigma. Absolutely. And it's great that there are projects like this. We've actually... He's not very well, or you know, or they got problems, but they're people, and they got so much more. You know, you've got so much more to you than you would expect. Is there a website for Grounded Ecotherapy? If people have a look,
you can find us on Facebook at the moment.
Right, okay.
We're just waiting to set up. You can see us on prha.com, which is the Providence Row Housing Association's website.
Okay,
there's lots of contacts. On
Paul,
there.
Your garden is on the Queen Elizabeth Hall roof. Is that right?
That's right. And also, we've just built another garden this year, which are on top of the Hayward Gallery. And that is another wonderful experience. That is a secret woodland with silver birch trees, ferns, woodland plants. And I could say it's one of the most coolest places to be on a summer's evening. Well, in fact, the Queen Elizabeth Hall Hayward Gallery is the coolest place to be on a Friday evening, Saturday evening. The lawn is like Copacabana Beach. People are having picnics on it.
It's good. Get them as your PR guy.
You've got over 150 species of wildflowers right in your face. Yep. There's thousands of bumblebees and honeybees swarming over the whole garden. The potatoes are growing higher than the children. So for the young children, they can just run around the vegetable boxes with potato flowers just slapping them across the side of their faces and everything. No, you must go and see it.
Basically, it sounds like a cracking idea, and it sounds like it's working really well.
It is working.
So all those places that Paul mentioned are kind of the nooks and crannies and the different venues at South Bank Centre. So, and I have to just stress that this garden is here pretty much all year round, apart from a bit of maintenance in the winter. And this has given the inspiration for the Festival of Neighbourhood.
And how long is the festival going on for? When does that?
Until the 8th of September.
8th of September,
yep.
Okay.
And still lots and lots to come and do.
And if people go to, what website is the best place to come?
southbankcentre.co.uk, which will also tell you more about our gardening projects.
Sounds like a cracking idea. Rachel, thank you very much. Kelvin and Paul, Sounds brilliant. Best of luck. Thank Keep you. Up the good work, gentlemen.
Come and visit, and I'll you leave with a bag of veg. Well, this, you take me up on that.
The stuff you brought is for you to wash your hair.
No. You
know,
come
some sweet peas or something.
Yeah, no, you come, and I promise you'll walk off with a bag of veg. Enough to feed your family.
It's very, very nice to meet you all. Thank you so much for coming in. This is Ian Lee on BBC London 94.9, sitting in for Robert Elms. Oh, my goodness, look at that. The time is 1:30. I think that's... Oh, that was the traveller. Well, I thought that was the end. I thought that chatter was the end of Jo Good's trail, because she was talking about being in a restaurant and waitressing, and it sounded like the hubbub. There's a word you don't hear very often, doesn't it? The hubbub of a restaurant. It wasn't. It was the noise from the travel booth. It's 2-1. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms on BBC London 94.9. He would never have done anything as foolish as that, and for that I can only apologise. You've been very patient today. Thank you very much. Coming up before 2 o'clock, we'll be speaking to Katie Ingham, who's the director of ilovemarkets.co.uk. It's a site that kind of celebrates the magic of small markets, big markets, independent markets, all of those things. I'm keen to get your market stories today, if you can. I've been saying this all day. My favourite market was Camden Market 20 years ago, closely followed by Kensington Market 23 years ago. They were, I guess, mainly because you could go there and buy bootleg vinyl records. I know, a little bit naughty, a little bit, quite a bit illegal, but... I did used to... There was a frisson about those markets. They felt a little bit... they felt dangerous. Now, of course, they weren't particularly dangerous back then, not on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. But it just felt naughty being there. And you kind of lose that now. Well, what's your favourite market, past or present, and why? What was it about this market that you used to go to, or you still go to, that got you excited and made you think, yeah, this is something a little bit special? Give me a call, 020-722-42000, or email ian.lee@bbc.co.uk, and we'll have a little chat about that. You can also send me a text, 81333. Start your text London, and Katie Ingham will be in soon, and maybe you can have a chat to her. Oh, bit of John Denver. I don't mind if I do. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9, sitting in for Robert Elms. I'm joined now by Katie Ingham, director of ilovemarkets.co.uk. Hello, Katie.
Hello.
Are you having a baby?
I am having a baby.
Not now. Let's calm everyone down. But you're saying this is your first child, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And you're not sure if it'll make your life any more mental than it actually is.
No, my life is pretty chaotic at the moment. Yeah. I can't imagine. I think it's going to be the easiest thing I've ever done, but I don't know. I'm sure I'll find out otherwise.
You are in for a shock, young lady. It is mental having kids. It's wonderful, but it's bonkers. Do you know what you're having?
I'm having a little girl. Oh. So I'm hoping I'm going to, you know, bring her around all the markets, and she'll be the new generation of I Love Markets.
Now listen, when I heard we were talking markets, and we had you, director of ilovemarkets.co.uk, I was expecting someone a little bit older. And I was quite surprised that a young, bubbly, young person burst into the studio.
This is the new generation of London's markets.
Why do you love markets.co.uk so much?
Because, you know, it's born out of my passion, personal passion for London's markets. I think I came from outside of London, so I'm from the burbs officially.
Right.
So when I started trading at Camden Market when I was still at school, actually, I was just in awe of the place. I loved it. It was like just so many mental things, like the clothes, the products on offer, all the things you can buy, the music, the cultures.
Yeah.
Just loved it, really, and it's carried on from there, and it's grown, and I think I've been living in London since I went to uni, so quite a while now. I don't look as young as I am.
Whereabouts did you go to uni?
I went to uni at Westminster.
Oh, yeah.
I did radio, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll give you a few tips later on. Don't touch it.
But, yeah, I've been in London for, like, 15 years, so over that time, I've seen it evolve and change, and different areas come and go, really. Yeah. And I think we're talking about South London today.
It's South London markets today. Now, cards on the table. I'm a North Londoner. South London
so
markets. South London markets, I'm not too hot on, so I'm looking forward to hearing about these.
Yeah, well,
what have we got?
South London, I mean, when I thought about, you know, which markets shall I talk about, I kind of thought, well, you know, one thing that becomes apparent is actually South London's pretty good at using markets as a way of engaging communities, steering social change, integrating quite diverse communities as well, if you look to like Brixton. And I thought about first, like, the oldest market in London, which is probably Borough Market, which is in Southwark. And that itself is a registered charity. It dates back to like 1014.
The market's a registered charity?
Yeah, apparently really? So. And they do a lot. I mean, it comes from a purpose of good. So it has a great community spirit. The trades all go out drinking after hours. They have a newspaper. You know, they do a lot. And obviously, they're pivotal in servicing the culinary trade of London as well as the local community too.
So it sounds like that market itself, if it's a charity and it's got its own newspaper, that it's its own little community within a community.
Exactly, then. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think modern day kind of South London, the buzzword of Brixton in Lambeth has to be mentioned. It was nominated Stylist Magazine's most hip community.
Okay, well, that instantly means it's 6 months out of date, doesn't it?
Yeah, Brixton is the place to be. And I think traditionally white people were quite intimidated by Brixton. Yeah. And I know still when you talk to people now, they're like, Brixton, really?
Does it still have that kind of
attitude? Amongst some, maybe more in the middle classes, right, I don't know. But Brixton itself is really lively. I mean, there's a community-run market at Station Road, which may live in the shadows of Brixton Village and Market Row, which are obviously hugely successful. But that's a great community-run market. It's also a charitable federation, so it's run by the community for the community. They run on a Saturday, so they have four different events each month. I think this Saturday coming up, they've got the Bakers and Flea Market.
Right.
And then the second of the month is Brixton's Makers Market, which is South Londoners coming and selling all their creative goods.
Oh, okay. So arts and crafts.
I mean, you know, designer and makers and creatives generally are really important to London's markets because they are pivotal, really, like instrumental in kind of making them desirable to visit, I think. And we've got loads of them on the I Love Markets website, and you can look through their products and things.
Markets are kind of having a little bit of a comeback because the High Street.
A massive comeback.
The High Street.
What are you talking about?
I apologise. Don't want to get on the wrong side of you. The High Street is sort of dying a little bit. The traditional High Street.
I think it's dead.
If it's not dead, it looks like it's on its way out. That Porter's Pilot thing didn't really work. The money that was dished out, it didn't really work.
Controversial.
Well, a lot of the places have got that were awarded money have got more shops shut now than they did when she first got
involved. Raymond Road had its own little discussion about how, you know, how successful it was.
But the marketplace, the market stalls, it is making kind of a comeback where the High Street is failing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, obviously, it promotes independent traders. You can buy unique things, things that you can't find on the High Street, you know, generic high streets. I think if you look towards, say, Greenwich Market, which is obviously hugely successful, if you compare that to Brixton, I think it's looking a bit tired, you know.
Really?
I mean, sadly, the retro market, which was there, which used to be a really cool hangout for young people, that closed. It's made way for a college. There's shops shutting, vintage stores selling up. You know, it's obviously still really popular with tourists, and it's a great place. It's quite twee. You know, you'll find great London kind of made products there on the weekend, and they do a nice antiques retro market there on Thursday. But I think if you compare it to somewhere like Brixton and Brixton Village, they're a lot more exciting. Brixton Village and Market Row are really great examples of how you can successfully mix like traditional markets with, you know, kind of new gastro markets, as it were.
Gastro markets. There's a made-up phrase if ever I heard one.
But it's obviously a culinary hub of London now, Brixton Village and Market Row. Like Franco Manco Pizza's there. It's like an institution of Brixton. And generally the cafes and restaurants are packed. And there's a really cool place called Agile Rabbit as well, which on Thursday, Friday night, you can listen to live music. I mean, it's traditionally a scummy indoor market, so it's a disused scummy indoor market, which you'd probably never stop foot in. And I'm sure there's like quite a few of them across the country that still exist.
Yeah.
But it's a great example of how they've integrated two very diverse communities, really, and very successfully. It's really interesting place. There's lots of independent traders there, too.
Did you hear this thing today that Eric Pickles is saying that he wants to be, people can park on double yellow lines?
Every time I hear his name. It makes me.
It is a good name, isn't it? Eric Pickles. Mr. Pickles.
Mr. Pickles.
He is suggesting that at some point in the future, people will be able to park on double yellow lines for 15 minutes.
I just heard that when tickets. I sat in your waiting area, yeah.
Do you think that will help shops and markets?
Do you know what? That's one thing I hate about living in London is the fact that you can't just nip down the high street, yeah. Slap your car like, on the side of the road and jump in and buy a loaf of bread. If you are, you're kind of like turning round the whole time, you know, wondering whether you're going to get a ticket slapped on your car.
But if everyone did that, then it would be a mess, wouldn't it?
I think pedestrianisation is the way forward. Right. You know, if you look at Oxford Street, it needs pedestrianising, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If they did that, then surely people would be very, very happy. Just have a little tram or something running from one end to the other.
They've had days, haven't they, where Oxford Street is... I can't remember the last time they did it. Was it last year or the year before? Where people can't drive down Oxford Street. There's no traffic.
Yeah, and it's lovely. Yeah, I've cycled through it when it's like that, and it's great.
It makes such a difference.
Yeah.
What other markets have you got for us in South London? Where are we going next?
South London, I think, if we think about up-and-coming areas, obviously Deptford's probably worth mentioning.
Right.
It's a traditional street market, but obviously it's kind of in Lewisham, it's beside Greenwich, but not as much money in the council and the area as Greenwich. But yeah, there are lots of creatives kind of flock to these areas because it's cheap. It's cheap to open up a business. So that's one to look out for as well. There's also within Brixton Lambeth itself, there's a market called Crafty Fox, which are an independent crafty market for creatives.
Right.
They do an event at the Dog Star, which is a pub in Brixton.
I went to the Dog Star 23 years ago, young lady, and I had a terrible hangover the next day. That's all I can remember about it.
But yeah, they have their real own community going on. They do lots of kind of crafty talks and workshops and things
like that. You mean crafty as in, again, making stuff?
Yeah, making stuff.
A little crafty chat there?
No, as in making stuff, okay. You know, for creative types. And that's one to look out for. I think they're involved. And Peckham is kind of an area that's been mentioned all the time in South London. There's Pexmas, which happens at Christmas. It's their Christmas market at the Bussey Building.
Yeah, that's clever. How difficult is it to set up your own market? Is it an expensive thing to start initially?
Well, I mean, market itself or just as a trader?
You set up your own stall within a market.
No, I mean, it's really cheap to do. Right. I mean, you just need, obviously, your products or your business. You can get a market stall. It depends on where. I mean, a lot of the successful markets, they come under kind of they're criticised because they're very expensive to trade at.
Right.
So I think the more successful the markets become, sometimes the more expensive they become to, you know, get to them.
And that's a shame because that means that some of the smaller, perhaps slightly quirkier stalls and people might be discouraged from opening up there.
Yeah, possibly. But I mean, I think it makes way. I think it keeps the whole system kind of turning over, really.
Right.
Because then it makes way for the smaller independent markets. Like some of them are, you know, even like Brixton Station Road's really cheap. I think it's about £20 for a Saturday stall, which isn't much at all.
Yeah.
In comparison to, say, East London and Brick Lane, where you're paying maybe £90, I think, for a Sunday or Old Spitter or something.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I mean, it's pretty hard. Like, we've got people on our website who sell, you know, all sorts of products from kind of handmade cards to, you know, stationery, things like that. You think, how many cards do they need to sell in order to make their money for the day? Like, you kind of weigh it up and think, I don't know.
20 quid a day, though, that's not a,
20 quid a day is a
bad
bargain.
Investment, is
no,
it, really?
It's a good investment. And I think they did this scheme this year, Love Your Local Market, which encouraged market organisers to offer stalls cheap to people wanting to try out the market.
Oh, yeah, this was all across the country, wasn't it? They were doing this.
Yeah, I mean, markets are politically very fashionable too, you know, at the moment. But, yeah, I mean, it's a great way, obviously, to test out your business, test out your product. You can get feedback directly from people. So, great. I mean, compared to the high street, you can't beat it, really. Mm. And people love doing the markets. I mean, when you talk to people, it's often about their passion for just being in that environment, you know, being customer-facing and meeting other traders as well and learning from them. So,
you know, when you go past food stores and they've got little bits of cheese on, how much are you allowed to take before it starts?
They're tiny, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Are you allowed to take like a handful or keep coming back? What's the rule there with that?
I don't know, but I'd probably take a few too many. Markets are dangerous.
They are very dangerous. We've got time for one more. Go on, give us one more South London market if you've got any left, or have we used them all up?
No, and one that's coming up actually that's Thinks on this weekend, 4th of August, is West Norwood Feast in Lambeth.
Okay, go on. What's so special about this?
Well, this is another great example of a community-run market. So there's nothing in West Norwood, as you know. They have four different quarters.
Well, hang on a second. Can I just distance myself and the BBC from that statement? There must be plenty to do in West Norwood,
well,
surely.
Well, the people of West Norwood are really proud of this market because it's, you know, it's an event. It's a social calendar event. So they have lots going on there, food fair and artisan market, retro village. Yeah, so that's one going on this weekend, actually, that people can check out. And all the events I've mentioned are on our website.
Okay.
ironofmarkets.co.uk.
Okay, and how do if I did have a market stall, I don't. If I did and I wanted it on your website, do I just email in and say,
yeah,
listen?
Yeah, you just come to the website and contact us. We're actually, like, changing the site slightly at the moment, so it makes it easier for people to add their own market, which okay. would be really cool. Because we hope to represent all different markets across London, really.
But it's one of those things, if you've got nothing to do on a Sunday morning, or, you know, it's one of those, oh, should we go for a wander around a market? And
yeah,
it's great, isn't it?
Great.
It's just that noise and
where's
that
your favourite market, then?
Well, I was saying my favourite market used to be Camden, but 20 years ago when it was a little bit naughty.
Edgier.
Yeah. It's a bit homogenised and a bit safe.
It is. It's, yeah, we're talking North London next time with Robert Elms, I think, on
okay.
August the... 14th, am I right in saying
I've got no idea what day
yeah,
it is.
I think
today.
It's August the 14th.
For goodness sakes.
It seems like a long time ago, but yeah, we're talking North London with Robert Elms next time.
Brilliant.
So I wondered whether, like, South London does actually community better than North London. That's something I'll put to Robert.
Well, you've thrown it out there now. People
but I'm wondering whether
in.
North London's more infected by capitalism than South London.
Right on, comrade.
Come on.
020-722-42000. We're not going to have a North-South London fight. That would be churlish. But if I want your market stories, the best market, the worst market, the best bargain, the worst rip, anything you want to tell us about markets, 020-722-42000. Katie Ingham, ilovemarkets.co.uk. Very nice
Thank
to meet you.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you.
Good luck with the baby.
And I've just read my notes. It's August the 12th. I'm on with Robert.
Well, I'm going to put that in my diary and make sure I won't miss
Listen
it.
Listen up if you love markets.
See you later on. Take care. Thank you. Hello, this is Ian Lee. Well, there we go, that's it. This is Ian Lee, sitting in for Robert Elms. I'm here all week, but don't worry, we're not messing around with the formula too much. We're pretty much following the very strict guidelines that Robert has left for me. BBC London 94.9. Your favourite market in London, please, and why? I do like a good market. I don't mind a bad market either, to be honest. It's just something about it, isn't there? Walking around, trying bits and pieces, having a look at the smells, the sounds. The one market I don't get. Should I say this? Farmers markets. I don't want to buy a loaf of bread for £5. I don't want a bottle of your homemade cider for £7.50. I don't want a tiny slither of cheese for £8. The farmer's market is something I have never quite... Well, I got it for a little bit because I was pretentious middle class and would go there and think, oh, homemade croissants, £4.50 each, I'll have five. But no, really, I don't get the farmer's market. But give us a call, 020-7224-2000. Let's get the best and indeed the worst markets and your market stories. I'm a little bit late, it's coming up to 2 o'clock.
BBC London 94.9.
London's news. London's stories.
A mixture of sunshine and showers continue.
Oh dear, we were getting away so well, weren't we? We almost got away with it. And then this silly sausage left the fader open and we got a little bonus weather update. Sorry. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms and they're making a general hash of things. But that's all... I'm doing it to make Robert look even better, you see. When he comes back, it'll be all smooth and wonderful. Robert, I was listening last week to that Ian Lee and I've made a load of mistakes. Nah, we'll get by. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms, BBC London 94.9, here until 3 o'clock. The last half hour of the show, we've got Joe Stilgo coming in. He's a pianist. and a singer. He's got a new single out. He's going to play that live. There is a piano in the studio. He's going to sing and play it live. Wonderful. In the next half an hour, though, I want to talk to you about markets. We just had Katie Ingham in talking about markets in South London. We don't need to specifically look at South London markets now. Just your market stories. And I'm going to leave it as open and as vague as that. It can be anything you want. Let's try and find some of the best markets in London, shall we? Fair play, let's try and find some of the worst as well. And your market stories, maybe you had a stall, maybe you bought something wonderful in a market that you've never got anywhere else, maybe you were fleeced mercilessly. And here's something, sometimes I abuse the BBC for my own personal gains, I'm going to do it now. Which markets in London still have record stalls? Because it was one of my favourite things as a boy and as a man. But it's something my wife doesn't understand. If I see a record stall or a record shop, records, not CDs, I have to go and have a look. I have to browse through everything. You don't really get record stalls in markets anymore, do you? Or maybe you do and I've just not spotted them. Give me a call, let me know. The best markets, worst markets. More importantly, what markets have still got a record stall in? It was normally run by some old geezer who had, like, he had a little roll-up going on. He had about 300 punk singles. Nice soul section. Always Beatles. Always a Beatles and a Beatles solo. Are there any market stalls that have got records left? Do give me a call today. And also on coloured vinyls as well. Oh, don't get me started. Do not get me started, please. You can send me an email on this one if you want. 81333. Start your... that's not an email. That's a text. 81333. Start your text. London. Or you can send me an email if you want. Ian.Lee, I-A-I-N dot L-E-E at bbc.co.uk. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9, sitting in for Robert Elms, and I'm having the time of my life. Thank you so much. I'm getting some nice emails and texts coming in, and it's very nice. I know I'm a big fan of radio, big fan of Robert, and I know that when someone else sits in, you turn on your radio and it's a different voice, a little bit of your soul dies, doesn't it? A little bit of you goes, oh no. And I'm the same. But thank you for those that have stayed here. I've had a few texts in. Ian, I'm quite normal, except I listen to you. Well, I don't quite know what that means. Annie in E17, we were talking about markets. I questioned how successful Mary Portas had been in her attempt to revive the high street. Remember, she awarded lots of money, like 50 grand or 100 grand, to various high streets to revive them. I said it hadn't been very successful. And he says, don't knock Mary Portas. At least she tried. Well, yeah, she tried, but she kind of wasted a load of money. Not necessarily her fault. Some of the high streets still haven't spent the money that she's given them. Well, what good is that? Annie carries on. Roman Road would have been wise to listen. Their dinosaur attitude has left market somewhere to avoid. And Mark in Bletchley Towers. Afternoon, Ian. I'm watching the biggest and loudest storm up here in Bletchley Towers. Oh, there's a storm brewing. Is there? Hope you don't get this in London. Brixton Market was the last market I visited when Jo Good... the lovely... She's bonkers. I don't think she'd mind me saying that. Maybe she would. And if she does mind, she'll let me know very shortly. I like Jo. She's brilliant, though. I visited there when Jo Good did her show there. I'd not been down there since 1968. I do want to know your market stories. Can we find... I don't think even Camden Market has got record stalls in anymore. Has it? You used to be able to go there. There used to be the fellas in Camden High Street who would sell the hooky live videos. And there was a great guy, a bloke called Dave, at Camden Market on the right-hand side. With the electric ballroom on the right, you keep going, you go past the open market, and then the covered market just over the bridge. There was a guy called Dave who used to have a fantastic stall selling vinyl and CDs. And in there was a vinyl market as well. Are there any markets in London that have vinyl that you can buy. I've Glenn in W10 has just texted in 81333, starting his text, London. Portobello Market has vinyl stalls. I know the one under the canopy bit on Sunday has some great classic stuff. There's something, and I'm gonna paint with a rather generic, slightly sexist brush. Okay, it's a man thing, isn't it? It's a man thing to look through markets, look through record stores, and stand there and thumb through. And even what we do, and if you want to correct me, 0207 224 2000, even pull out and stare for quite a long time at records we already have. Oh, there's Extra Texture by George Harrison. Yeah, I got that. But yeah, you can stare at it for ages and read it, even though it's at home in your room. Michael's in Harrow. Hello, Michael.
Yeah, good afternoon, Ian.
Michael, are you a fan of markets?
Yeah, Portobello Road, actually. You know, I like that. I've seen that store. Bought records in the 70s from under the canopy there.
Is it still there? The Portobello Market still has the vinyl stalls, does it?
I don't really. It was more, you know, in the sort of punk thing.
Right.
I used to buy the records, you know, in the 70s, and so yeah, I don't really buy them now. But I go there regularly, and there's a fantastic Malaysian restaurant just on under the Westway there, and called Makan. So yeah, go there, and the market's still really good.
The market is good. Do you know, I've not been there for a while. That used to be my little treat at weekends, was to go up there. One of the great things you just reminded me about markets is some of the food you can get. Some of the stalls selling food from all over. You mentioned Malaysian food, or Thai food, or Chinese, or Jamaican food. All these different foods, the smells.
Yeah.
And you can get yourself good portions for not much money as well.
It's reasonable. It's very, very good prices. Yeah, I mean, this is actually a sort of restaurant cafe that's open, you know, every day till 9 o'clock. And the quality, I think, you know, I've spoken to Malaysian people in the restaurant, and they said it's as good as their mum's cooking.
This is the thing. If you can find a Chinese restaurant that's got Chinese people in, or a Japanese restaurant that's got Japanese people in, head there. You know, if they're eating their own food, then that's the place to go, isn't it?
Yeah, I heard that from a Malaysian bloke. Told me that, you know, and up Goulburn Road, there's good Moroccan food. You can buy street food there now. There's all like these little stalls have opened, and yeah, it's still great. Portobello Road.
Well, thanks, Michael. You're making me feel really hungry now. I'm stuck in this glass box and I'm starving now. Now, you mentioned vinyl. Do you still have any vinyl, or have you got rid of it all?
No, I've still got some of the old music from early 70s, like Bowie till Alice Cooper.
Do you dig it out and play it on vinyl?
I did, yeah, on an old, you know, the one with a spindle. It was my mum and dad's, it was a wedding present. You know, those little, it was like a box, and you lift up the lid and stack the records up.
Oh, right.
That's the only record player I've got. So.
Oh, but listen, is it like an old dancette kind of styly, the record player?
I think it's Ferguson, I think.
That's what 60s and 70s singles should be played on. They shouldn't be played on compact disc or MP3. They should be played on those bad boys.
Then they drop down, then you can stack a few up and they drop. And
if you stack too many, they start to slow down a bit.
Probably. It's a while since I used it now.
Oh, Michael, listen, do me a favour. Go and dig it out. Line up some singles on there this afternoon and have a listen. It will sound wonderful.
I will, yeah.
Michael, very nice to talk to you. Thank you. My little boy, who's 3.5, when I showed him a record for the first time, I buy quite a lot of records on eBay, I know. And when I showed it for him for the first time, what's that? It's what we play music on. Is it a DVD? No. Is it a CD? No. What is it? And we've got a dancette record player. It's beautiful, about 1964. Put it on eBay. It's gorgeous. And I've kind of given it to him because I had a record player his age. And he loves it. He loves the whole thing of opening the box, getting the single out, putting it on, putting a few singles on, putting the arm across, flicking the switch. Oh, and to watch him dancing to the Hollies. or dancing to Please Please Me by the Beatles in our garage. My wife won't allow it in the house. Helen's in Brixton. Morning, morning. Good afternoon, Helen. Oh, no, Helen, whereabouts are you? Are you there? Helen, we'll get you. We'll put you on OS 7 in a second, and we'll speak to you. Listen, bear with me. It's my first day in this studio. Of course, a few gremlins are going to pop up. Helen, are you there now?
Well, I can hear you, but I've got my. You're probably getting a lot of feedback, so I'm sort of listening.
Switch your radio off. We can have a proper phone call.
Yeah, then I can't hear anything.
You should be able to hear me now, Helen.
Yep.
You got it. It's fine. I'd flicked the wrong switch.
Okay.
Portobello Market, you know the record stall, do you?
Yeah, I know Dave, the guy that runs the record stall under the canopy at Portobello on a Saturday.
And is it still there?
Yeah, he's still there. He's been doing it the whole time I've known him, since 1990. He was doing it before that, and... yeah, he's always been at Portobello. And it's still his own record collection he's selling.
Wow. How big must his record collection be, then?
Pretty amazing. He also does some of the they have these big record fairs for traders at Earl's Court every now and again. He does those sort of things as well.
I love those record fairs. And again, I can spend the whole day there just going through those racks, looking at it. There's something deeply wonderful and soul stirring going through a box of vinyl.
It's definitely not just a male thing because always done that as well. And, actually, my boyfriend thinks I'm a bit of a nerd in that respect.
Listen, you and I should go out one afternoon and go and do this, because my wife just doesn't get it. And if I say I'm disappearing into a record shop, she'll say, right, you've got 20 minutes, and if you're not back out, I'm going home without you. So I can understand, you know, what it's like to be the partner of someone who doesn't get it.
Yeah, but yeah, vinyl's definitely come back into full force. Dave said that, you know, he's just not selling CDs anymore. Basically, no one's buying them, but they're really into the vinyl. And actually, I have another friend who's got two record shops up in up north somewhere, and he's just opened a new one that's just vinyl.
Wonderful. That fills my heart with joy, knowing that someone has opened a vinyl record shop. Helen in Brixton, thank you very much. 0207 22 42000. Well, we're talking about vinyl in markets. We can talk about that. We can get your market stories. Coming up before 3 o'clock, we're going to have a guest. We've got Joe Stilgo coming in, which I'm very excited about. But before that, should we have a little bit more music? Yes, why not? A little bit of Solomon Burt there. We're getting reports of storms in various places, especially towers. There was nearly one here in central London earlier, but the sun seems to be out. Permission to speak freely. I've had enough of this hot weather. I've had enough of this hot weather, please. It's given me headaches. I'm sweaty. I'm uncomfortable. I'm having to sleep. I don't like to say this. I've got young ears listening. School holidays and everything. I'm having to sleep naked in bed. It's not pleasant for anybody involved. Nobody wants to see that, least of all me. We're talking about markets. We're trying to find the best, the worst, your market stories. We're also talking about vinyl. We found that Portobello Market has got a vinyl store. It's Dave. He's been there for a long, long time. Who's this on line 7? Funky P.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you. Funky P, how you doing?
Yes, very well, thank you, mate. Yeah, very well, thank you.
We're looking for market stalls markets that have still got vinyl stalls. Do you know any?
Yeah, I do. I was up Brick Lane yesterday. I DJ still, and I still play vinyl, nothing but vinyl. So I go down to Brick Lane, I go down to Camden, and still sorts out me vinyl. So,
what kind of stuff are you DJing?
I'm playing 60s, 70s soul, real R&B, what we used to call real R&B.
So you don't mean Beyonce and Rihanna?
No, okay.
Isn't it funny how that term has evolved into meaning something completely different?
Absolutely.
The Who were an R&B band, for goodness sakes.
Yes, so I play music. It's music for real people, really. So I play soul music, I play funk music. And anything that brings nostalgia back.
And when you turn up with your big crates of vinyl, do people not laugh at you a little bit?
No, people are absolutely amazed. People actually look and think, well, this bloke really doesn't know what he's doing. I think when you go to a lot of these clubs and you see people pull out their laptops and stuff,
well,
anyone can do that.
That's the thing is,
to actually have your vinyl and to actually know your sleeve notes, to know your tracks, that to me is someone that actually enjoys music and appreciates.
Well, that's the thing. It's not even CDs anymore. It is songs on your laptop. Well, you might as well just plug your iPod in and press play.
Exactly. Anyone can press a button. Anyone can press a button.
Yeah. And why do you like vinyl so much? I know why I enjoy it and what I get out of it. What's so special about it for you?
You've got your sleeve notes. You've got your memories of when you were growing up. Your mum and dad used to have your Daryl Hall and John Oates. They used to have your James Taylor. Mm. You've got all that sort of stuff. You've got nostalgia with it. So you can pull it out. You can smell the vinyl. You can smell your mum's old perfume on it. You can smell your dad's old Brut on it. There's a lot of nostalgia to it.
I have got a record. It's a Monkees record from 1970. It's sealed. It's never been opened. And one day, either on my deathbed or when everything goes horribly, horribly wrong for me, to cheer myself up, I'm going to slice open that that cellophane wrapper, and I'm going to take a deep breath of 1970. And it's going to smell wonderful.
It will smell wonderful. It will. But at the same time, it will smell wonderful when you sell it. The amount of money you'll get on that.
Yeah,
if you don't play it,
yeah,
then, you know. But yeah, I absolutely love vinyl. I still DJ. As I said, I'm down there next Saturday at Brick Lane. There's a place called the Northern Soul Kitchen.
Yeah.
I'm playing down there from 12 until late, playing all the best in kind of yesterday's soul. Playing 60s, 70s, disco, rare groove, boogie, funk, and I'll probably spin a little bit of kind of roots reggae. Just to get the crowd involvement. You know, there's a lot of DJs that play these days, and they seem to forget that us 40-year-olds, all right, we're knocking on, but they seem to forget that there are people out there that still want to go out, still listen to good music.
Yep, you're right. Funky P, listen, we have to end it there. Thank you very much. Indeed. In another life, I work at another radio station, and I dared to play a vinyl record the other day, and the sound engineer was panicking terribly, because we had to test the deck to make sure it worked and was going through the system. And the sound engineer said, what you want to do is you want to kind of just get it to the start of the music so that we don't hear the crackle at the start. I said, no. I want to hear the crackle at the start. That's why I'm playing a record. I want to hear that. Just that little pop before we go into the music. That's what it's all about. And don't get me started. I'm started. Vinyl, it's just so much fatter. That sound is so much bigger and deeper. I'm sounding like such an old soul. Oh, man, I've turned into an old fart. When did that happen? It was about 6 weeks ago when I became 40. This is Ian Lee, BBC London 94.9. We've got Joe Stilgo coming up before 3 o'clock. Thank you very much. This is Ian Lee, sitting in for Robert Elms. I'm here all week, here until 3 o'clock today. BBC London 94.9, the last 30 minutes of the show. We're going to be joined by Joe Stilgo in a few minutes, who's going to play us a song live on the old Joanna. You've still got time if you want to give us a quick call about markets and vinyl and where we can buy vinyl. 020-722-42000. I'm here for the week. If you want to get in touch after the show, maybe you've got some suggestions of things you'd like me to talk about during the week, then send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. Before Joe comes in, should we have a little bit of this? Oh, Sandy Shaw, wonderful stuff. Ah, this is Ian Lee on BBC London 94.9. I'm joined now by Joe Stilgo. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Ian. Putting the headphones on.
You don't need the headphones if you don't want.
I'll take them off.
They may confuse you.
I quite like the sound of your voice, not mine.
Well, you can wear them when I'm speaking, and then when you're speaking, whip them off.
Okay.
You're going to keep
them. Is anyone looking? Is there a webcam?
Is anyone listening? That's the question. Mm. Now, listen, we get it out of the way because we have to. You're Richard Stilgo's son.
Yes.
Son. There we go. Now we can move on. We can move on. How is he? Is he all right?
Yeah, he's fine.
Okay, good. Yeah. Because I grew up loving Richard Stilgo, and then he seems to have kind of disappeared, is he?
Yeah, people ask if he's dead. I play.
As I said it, I thought, oh, God, please,
Imagine that, though.
That'd been awful.
Imagine if that was my trigger. Now, a lot of people come up to me and say, how is he? Is he?
When?
Is he? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's fine.
Is he right?
He's 70, so that's...
That says it.
But he looks...
73. Listen, no more about your dad. We're here to talk about you.
Leave him be.
You are a musician, a singer, a pianist, all of these things. Mm. Who'd have thought it?
I know.
Did you not at any point think, I'm going to rebel against, you know, my dad and my family and do something completely different?
You know what? My rebellion was aged 16.
Yep.
I went to work for an estate agent for 2 weeks. That was the big one.
And how did that go?
Other, you know, my friends are getting their eyebrows pierced yep. and kind of tattoos of their mother's faces on their backs. And I decided to work for an estate agent for 2 weeks, walked around some big houses and thought, this is a great job. Mm. And then I realised that wasn't actually my calling.
That it involved lying to people.
Hey, I was just about to go down the route of, you know, denigrating estate agents. But we've got some listening.
I'm teasing. A few estate agents are wonderful, wonderful human beings, and I would never argue. So how did you get... Obviously, you come from a musical background. At what point did you realise, actually, I'm seeing my old man, I wouldn't mind having a go at that. Was there a moment you thought, I could do this?
It was probably little bits of spurs of inspiration throughout, I suppose. My mum was a singer as well.
Right.
So... growing up, it seemed like a normal thing to do, which is the first thing you need to get out of the way, that because lots of people think it's abnormal.
Yeah.
It's not. It's fine. And then probably when I was about 20, 21, I just ended up doing a lot more music, and that became quite comfortable on stage. And just the piano playing had got to a level where I thought, this is serviceable. I can at least ask people to pay for this to be listened to. And then... yeah, it sort of grew. I never had that moment, that epiphany, and thinking, I'm 14, this is what I want to be for the rest of my life.
You just kind of moved into it gradually.
Mm. And always, my rebellion for Dad, against Dad, was that I went into jazz, and Dad was always very much in the comedy tradition.
Yeah.
So I went and became a jazz pianist and worked in jazz clubs. But frighteningly, or... beautifully or serendipitously, I'm kind of moving towards him.
We all turn into our parents. We all turn into our parents. You can fight it as much as you want. It's inevitable. We got your new single, Abracadabra. Shall we have a little listen? I'm not sure if I've got completely the right track. We don't want track two. That's the instrumental, for goodness sakes. We want... Hang on a second. I'm not sure if I've broken the CD player or not. Let's see what comes up, shall we?
Why not?
If it's the instrumental, you can sing along live to it.
Yeah.
How's about them,
everyone?
Here we go. This is Joe Stilgo and Abracadabra. Or maybe not. Here we go, yes. It's 3-2. That's Joe Stilgo and Abracadabra.
Magic.
It's a nice big band sound, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got everything on it. If you're a bit lost in the studio, just keep throwing instruments at the problem.
It says here, the way radio works, let's pull back the curtain slightly, we get handed bits of paper that they're generally written by the person they're about, let's be honest. It says here that you are the British Michael Bublé meets Dudley Moore.
I don't think they ever met. It's an odd thing to say, isn't it?
It is an odd thing to say. But I can see that. I shouldn't like Bublé, but I do like Bublé.
I think we all feel like that.
There is something about him, isn't there?
He's like the peanut cracknel from the old Quality Street tins.
What the kids these days are going, what? Why did you choose that song? And it's a fantastic arrangement of it.
Thank you. Well, the difficulty with doing a cover is that you don't want people to go, I really... really don't think that song should ever be covered. That one by the Steve Miller Band, no relation to Ed, it's just one of those songs I remember from growing up.
Yep.
And I remember it being great, had this great chorus, loved the kind of the nonsense of the lyrics, which turned out to be very nonsense when I actually downloaded them. And I just thought it'd be fun to do in that style, that as if it was kind of a song from the 40s.
I suspect some of those musicians in the 70s and 80s, I don't know, I think some of them may have taken drugs.
Well,
I don't know.
People still do, but more things like Sinatogen.
Yes, oh man, I like that. Get me some
Loratadine.
Get me some of that bad boy. Mm. So what kind of, you're playing gigs and things, what kind of venues are you playing? Where are you playing?
Well, this year I've played Ronnie Scott, played the Jazz Cafe, I've played in the South Bank, so the Purcell Room in the South Bank.
Lovely.
And then out of London, I've just been to France, I've done a jazz festival in Saint-Emilion. Nice wine. and all over the place, really. I've been to Italy, I've been to New York last year. So I kind of jazz clubs, concert halls.
It's like
weddings.
A jazz sandwich today. We started off with Jill Manley. Mm. You've worked with her,
yeah,
have you?
I know Jill.
You know her.
Yeah.
Isn't she wonderful?
She's lovely.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
I won't say it.
No, she's got a stick. You don't want to say it when she's in the room. But absolutely delightful. And we're finishing with you. Now listen, we've got a piano in the room.
Oh, God.
And you've got a kazoo. Is that going to play a part in...
Well, you did mention it. It's a shame. I thought it would be a special surprise, or I wouldn't use it. But now you've mentioned it, it feels like we have to kind
you
of...
technically have to use it. If the kazoo is mentioned on air, it must be played.
I feel like it's all right because Eric Clapton used it on a record, so at least there's some kind of...
Did he? What record?
The Unplugged record, you know, the one that everyone's got.
Oh, yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah.
I find Clapton a little bit tedious. I know it's blasphemy, as he is indeed
God. I was going to do an Eric Clapton song, and he's popping in as well.
Wowzers, that's awkward. What have you got for us? Do you want to go and set up and...
Yeah.
Say set up. Do you want to move the
move
2 feet?
Excuse me.
He's there. And he's now there. There we go. You should be able to... We can hear you. That's it. It's lovely. Go on, what have you got for us?
Well, I'm going to do a song, I hope... It's probably as old as this piano. It's from 1931.
Oh.
So this is one for the kids. This is called Dream a Little Dream of Me.
Oh, beautiful. Away you go, sir. Fantastic. We'll have some of that. Come and sit back over here, please. Come on.
Thank you.
Hey, that was good. And there will be young people out there going, hang on a second, that wasn't written in 1967 by the Mamas and the Papas. It is an old standard,
so.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a cracking song.
They had the hit, didn't they?
They had the hit. Mama Cass had the hit with it. But yes, it's an old standard. A gorgeous song. There are lots of those songs from the kind of 30s that do sound quite modern and quite relevant, but they're kind of lost a bit.
As long as the song doesn't have any mention of words like buttermilk and strange things that are only specific to the 30s.
I only learnt, and this was about 6 months ago when I was reading a Mama Cass biography, the actual words that it'd say 90... Say 90 night.
Say 90, yes.
I always thought it was say 99.
Like ordering an ice cream.
Yeah, well, it
say
made...
Say 99 and kiss me.
It made no... I thought it was something to do with counting yourself to sleep. I know, it doesn't work on any level, but it was only 6 months ago.
Or sort of a difficult marriage. Count to 99 and then kiss me.
And then
me.
You can kiss
yes.
me. If you can make it that far,
not
it means
before.
You're interested. So what other songs are you playing in your set? What
well,
is it to comprise of?
Having just heard two covers, I mainly do my own songs, actually.
Right.
So, but I didn't feel I didn't want to inflict those upon you. Yeah, so inspired by songs like that, but also by all the people I grew up listening to, Billy Joel, the Beach Boys, anyone with a B, really, the Beatles.
What Beach Boys songs do you do?
Benny Hill.
Ernie, the fastest milkman in the West.
Yeah,
yes.
that's a cracker. It's especially slowed down as a ballad. My favourite one I'm just about to start doing... is I Just Wasn't Made for These Times from Pet Sounds.
Oh, man.
Because it kind of resonates for me as well. I do feel like I'm in sort of...
Yeah,
an old soul.
I'm a sucker for the Beach Boys. Oh, my gosh, they can still break my heart. And that's a cracking song.
Yeah.
Do you say that you have started doing a bit more comedy? Or not?
Well, I was involved with a comedy troupe called the Horn Section, who are still alive and well. We did a series on Radio 4, and they've just done another one with Alex Horn.
That's it. So I was reading about them a little while ago. Yes,
yeah.
You're in that, aren't
so
you?
I was kind of... We started that all together as a six-piece sort of comedy music shebang, and we did Edinburgh a couple of times. In fact, they're doing it this year at...
Oh.
The Underbelly.
But they've not invited...
No, I've been...
It's awkward.
Been kicked out, it's a shame. It's because of this. It's because of the kazoo.
Drop the kazoo. No, you've split on musical differences, literally.
I said 99 and kiss me, and then walked out.
So, but you do... I mean, when you're... What if I came to see a Joe Stilgo show... Would I demand a refund?
Can
what?
You?
What?
Can you please?
What would I get?
Well, I have a band.
Yep. Is it like a big band with brass and things?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Just the last gig I did was my trio, so double bass, drums,
right.
And me, and then horns.
Yep.
And then get your horns in there. But often it's just the trio, and it's a nice mix between old stuff, new stuff. And as you can hear, I do tend to waffle a bit in between songs.
We've got an email about you, or a text about you.
It's from...
It's Sarah in Hart says,
hi,
Ian, could you please ask Joe to go? Well, that's rude. No. Could you please tell Joe I have very fond memories of his grandfather when I grew up in Milford-on-Sea?
Oh.
He was a true gentleman and always used to salute our car as we drove past.
Brilliant. John, my grandpa John.
Did he used to salute cars? Is that what he was famous for?
He might have been wearing his slippers at that point. He used to give me a 50p piece when it had hands on it. Do you remember when the 50p?
I do, yeah, I do remember.
And he'd say
that.
Something about my hand plus your hand equals two hands plus five hands, seven. He confused us a lot,
yes.
But he was a lovely man, so I'm very glad.
Is there a website? If people want to come and find out more about you and find about your songs and your gigs and things
there
like
is,
that, where should they go?
JoeStilgo.com.
Yep.
On Facebook, Twitter. There is also Google, which you can use.
I've heard of this Google. I've heard good things about it.
I'm on Wikipedia, and I promise I didn't write any of that. And there are also other websites, but the
those
first
are the
ones,
best ones.
Yeah.
Wikipedia, the home of the made-up fact, I like to call it. Hey, it's very, very nice to meet you. Thank you so much for coming in. Best of luck with it. Best of luck with everything. I can say that because I'm an old man, and you're still comparatively young.
Thank you very much.
I hope it all works out for you.
Can I use that as a quote?
You can have
comparatively
it. Yes,
young.
You can have that. He's a very nice chap, Joe. I suspect, and I'm not ashamed to admit this, there's a little bit of flirting going on between me and Joe. Both happily married gentlemen. Both happily married. But there was a moment... Well, we just had our photo taken. I said to him, you smell very powerful. He's got a powerful scent about him. Something about him. I enjoyed that. For me, I'm a big fan of live music. But someone singing and playing on the piano, it's just one of the most basic pleasures in life, isn't it? I'm so... I tell you who I hate. I hate people who can sing. It makes me so jealous. People who can sing and play the piano makes me double jealous. Because I can't do either of those things. There's a turning point in most of our lives when we have to accept that we can't sing. And I accepted this about 12 years ago when I recorded a song for a friend and I played it back and I went, yeah, but what have you done to it? Have you done something to the voice? Oh my gosh, that's actually how I sound? And it was a heartbreaking moment, but a moment we all have to endure, most of us have to endure, when we realise we cannot sing. So to see a good-looking young man singing well and playing the piano, it makes me sick. Sick with envy. He was excellent, and I've got a copy of his album as well, Freebies. Oh, do I have to declare that? Do I have to declare that? Listen, this has been an absolute joy. This is Ian Lee sitting in for Robert Elms for the rest of the week here on BBC London 94.9. If you want to get in touch with me while I'm off air, do send me an email, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk, iaim.lee@bbc.co.uk. Back tomorrow at 12.